Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Who knows when Blue Jacket fans will again hear the sound of the cannon denoting a goal for the home team. The National Hockey League, like other pro sports, is at work on a plan to salvage something of the season with a made-for-television playoff tournament at two so-called hub cities. The idea is to distance the fans and keep the players as safe as possible amid the ongoing pandemic. Major League Soccer, Major League Baseball, the NBA, they're all shooting. And I really don't mean to have a pun there for return dates in July. But in every case, the details are bogging them down. Mike Arace is a sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome to the show, Mike.
And thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
And Julia Poe is a reporter for the Orlando Sentinel, where she covers the Orlando City Soccer Club and the MLS. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So, Julia Poe, what is MLS's plan to return to the pitch?
Yeah, so there's kind of two stages to it, and we're right here in Orlando, we're right in the middle of the first stage, which is a restart tournament that is going to start up actually next Wednesday, just 7 days left until that kicks off. It's very similar to the NBA's plan, where all of the teams are coming here. They're being sequestered into what we're all fondly calling the bubble at a Disney hotel. And then they are going to be competing in a first group stage and then knockout round tournament that is going to take place at ESPN Wide World of Sports in Disney. So it's all closed off. There's no fans. There is a broadcast package, so it will be nationally and internationally broadcast. But right now, they're just restarting without any fans in the stands.
Did I read it right that the NBA is going to be there at the same time?
Yes,
they are. I don't even get that.
Well, I think what people who don't, who haven't been to Disney or don't live in the area is that they don't understand how huge the Disney campus is. Disney actually exists in its own city that is like slightly separated from the rest of the Orlando area. It's a sprawling campus. So the NBA are sequestered in a completely different hotel that is miles away from where all of the MLS players are. They're playing and competing in completely different non-attached areas. So it's very possible to keep them completely sequestered. But I know that a lot of people just kind of, when they hear that they're both at Disney, I think everyone's just imagining all these teams like wandering around Epcot or something like that. That's not what it's going to look like.
Going on the rides together and whatnot. But otherwise,
exactly.
Disney's all shut down, right?
For now, it is. However, the parks are planning to begin reopening right now. Central Florida is really trying to push for some of those reopenings to happen as safely as possible. Mm-hmm. I know that Legoland and I think Universal have already opened here, and Disney is set to start reopening the parks very soon.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about pro sports coming back one way or another. That's Julia Poe. She covers the MLS for the Orlando Sentinel. Which will be in the thick of it in a few days when the MLS turns to Orlando with the teams and, as she describes, does a restart tourney. Also with us, Mike Arace. He's a sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. So, Mike Arace, I told you before we went on the air, you sort of inspired this show in your with your column opining for the fans the absence of pro sports and how they'll sort of just take anything at this point.
Yeah, well, I said that's a poor way to run a radio show too. Yeah, to say something on one of my columns, but yeah, I'm very dubious about all of it. You know, what's the today's headline is, you know, Dr. Fauci saying that we could get up to 100,000 cases a day.
Yeah.
I mean, our country has been among the most has not handled this as well as most other countries in the world, and trying to establish these bubbles for these sports leagues where you have traveling parties of you know, anywhere from like 35 to 50 people, and not expect there to be I don't know. I expect there to be a problem. It would not surprise me. And matter of fact, I'm leading in the direction of, you know, I don't think they're going to finish these things,
huh.
Or one of them's going to stop, or they're just going to shut it down. You know, it's just, I just see too many complications, too many things that can go wrong.
Right. Well, Julia Poe, you already reported on Monday that 18 MLS players tested positive for COVID-19. And did that create a setback already?
Not exactly. So, I mean, you have to look at when those numbers are happening and just what percentage of the league they actually make up. That's since June 3rd that they have tested positive. A lot of them were asymptomatic, and a lot of teams have been able to, because they're testing so often, they've been able to separate those players out from their teams, quarantine them, and still move forward. So what the league is doing right now is they're updating every day what testing looks like, because as the teams arrive, they charter in to Orlando. They come into the executive airport, not the main airport.
Uh-huh.
And then they go to the Disney Hotel and they're tested, and they go through this whole process where they're all separated and quarantined until they get their positive or negative tests back.
Uh-huh.
So a good amount of teams have already come through and done that. And so far, there's only been a total of, I believe, 6 people out of hundreds who have had positive tests and had to be separated and sequestered. So far the numbers look positive, and as someone who's, you know, here on the ground, I'm very hopeful that, you know, I'm hopeful, because the other alternative that you're suggesting is that there's an outbreak, and that is obviously a very terrifying idea, especially now that so many of the teams are on the ground. And I will add that there is already a pro sports league that has gotten strongly into their restart tournament, which is the Women's Soccer League, the NWSL. They're going in Utah, and so far everything has gone relatively smoothly, besides one team having to pull out due to coronavirus, but they've still been able to complete their first round of games. So I think once these teams get on the ground and the players are here, all that we can do is hope that there's not an outbreak, because...
I'm not rooting against this. I hope it all goes swimmingly well. I think the women's soccer example is germane, obviously, for a couple reasons. One of them being that one team pulled out because of the virus. And I look at the NHL situation, which I'm a little closer to than the others.
Mm-hmm.
And as of 2 days ago, the NHL said that, 15 out of the 300 players they've tested have tested positive, and they haven't even gotten to training camp yet.
Yeah.
So I'm dubious. I hope it all goes well. I hope these bubbles are airtight. But I don't know about young men running around with money in their pockets and running into walls that they think.
Trying to visualize is, you know, we're talking about an age group that is actually ranking higher in infections now. I'm kind of wondering about that too. So, Julia, to get kind of down in the weeds here for a second, what is this bubble? I mean, what do they mean by a bubble, and how airtight can it be? I mean, they got to bring in housekeeping crews. They got to have people cooking for them. Is everybody going to be in the bubble?
Right. So that was one of the big questions. And for MLS, at least, no, not everyone stays. So like you said, housekeepers and other hotel staff do go home. And that is one of the big concerns, is that Osceola and Orange County here in Central Florida are two of those counties that you're seeing some of those numbers kind of start to rise in, especially as a lot of people are going back to work in various places. What the league has set up, though, is to mirror, you know, this kind of new normal of contactless service and delivery, where for housekeeping, for instance, the players get to choose whether or not they want their rooms to be cleaned, which is a terrifying concept in itself.
The door, the line. I don't want to get literary about it, but it's a horrible.
But if they do make that decision, it's not like they're putting a little card out on their hotel door. There's an app where they can schedule it while they're gone, you know, at training or at some other team activities. So they're not coming into contact with those people, and there's increased funding for PPE, et cetera, so that when the housekeeping staff is coming in, they have that increased level of expectation for disinfecting things, sanitizing, et cetera.
I don't remember what I was reading now, because I've read so much about this, but something about the MLS, more than other pro sports teams, relies on the fans, the audience. And I don't know if you wrote about that, Mike Erace, or what, but it's more dependent on that. How do they?
Well,
go
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I mean, MLS, you know, if you take COVID-19 out of the picture, obviously very difficult to do, but they're smart to get in first. So they're going to be entering what was it, largely a television desert.
Yeah.
The losses that the different leagues have talked about due to coronavirus, if nothing restarts at all, are all a billion plus. In the case of MLS, by getting back on TV, they begin to mitigate that. And by getting back on TV at a time when the other sports are behind them in the process, means that their ratings are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have a stage they really haven't had. Good on them. I hope it all works out well. Also, you know, they got to hammer out a new collective bargaining agreement or extension in the process. And that's good. That kind of labor piece is good for both sides. It's something we didn't see in baseball, for instance. And you know, through this process of negotiating the restart, the players were insistent they didn't want to do this on the span of time they wanted to do it. I think the MLS tournament will last 35 days. Correct me if I'm wrong. And the players were insistent that it go no longer than that.
Julia Paul?
Yeah, well, if I can just add in there, and what you were talking about with kind of the revenue structure of the league, MLS is really unique in the fact that all of these other leagues that have been around for a bit longer, they are more set up to have a much larger percentage of their revenue come from broadcast deals and streaming options. So NFL, NBA, what they're worried about is making sure that they can carry through and, you know, complete those packages that they had previously agreed upon. Where MLS makes a majority of its revenue actually is not in those broadcast deals, it's in gate revenue. So that is people showing up on game day, buying tickets, coming into the stands, buying merch, buying food, etc. So that is a very unique issue that this league faces, is that there's not a safe way to replicate that in most markets anywhere in the near future. So creating a good tournament for them was even more important, because when leagues do start coming back and having regular season play, but maybe without fans, that's a possibility for a lot of leagues, MLS is still going to be struggling because they can't exist, they can't survive on their broadcast packages alone.
But, you know, I'm wondering if what they're doing with this, you know, the tournament and the comeback tournament and that whole thing, I wonder if it'll start to change that dynamic for MLS, that it will get people more used to watching it on television in the United States.
It's going to be a while. And I think the people that watch, I think the majority of people that watch soccer on television aren't watching MLS. They're watching things like the English Premier League or you know, right now, but Bundesliga was big for that span of time where it was the only thing on. But no, the elite European leagues attract a certain set of eyes. And that set of eyes is substantial in the United States, but it's not necessarily the same set of eyes that's watching MLS.
And
MLS is probably thumbnailing it around the 15th best league in the world. And until it gets into the top 10, it's not going to really capture the imagination of your average sportsman in America. It's not going to command the TV money that some of these other soccer leagues command, not even close.
What do you think, Julia Poe?
I definitely think that there is a lot of growth still to do. I mean, this was supposed to be a really big celebratory year for the league. It's their 25th anniversary. Coming into the season, there was so much excitement, so much hype around that. But I think something interesting is that, so the coach here in Orlando, Oscar Pareja, he's been around the league basically since its inception. He was a player and then became a coach. And I talked with him last week about it, and I asked him, you know, you've been through a lot with this league. How do you feel? How's your confidence in it right now?
Mm-hmm.
And he said that if this had happened 10 years ago, 15 years ago, he would be really, really concerned, like at a point where he'd be scoping around for other, you know, options, other ideas, et cetera.
Yeah.
But right now, he feels a lot more comfortable, a lot more confident moving forward. So I do think that that's a good sign for MLS that they've advanced to that point where they feel stable now.
What are they doing?
Oh, no, I mean, they've come a long way. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it was, what was it, 2002 when Lamar Hunt had to save the whole league with a cash call.
Yeah.
It was ready to fold. I mean, so, and that's not that long ago, Ann. I mean, it just with an overnight phone call, the league had to be saved. So, yeah, it's come a long way. It's trending right. It's going to take a while for them to get to where they want to be, for sure.
Well, Julia Poe, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And fingers crossed everything comes off in Orlando and you have fun and you don't get sick.
Definitely. That's all we can hope at this point.
Okay. Take care.
Be safe.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much. You
too. Bet. That's Julia Poe. She covers MLS for the Orlando Sentinel. We will continue our conversation because also with us is Mike Arias. He's a sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. And we're talking about pro sports returning to whatever venues they play in for the fans, but without the fans. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. When the Columbus Blue Jackets last played, they were battling injuries while fighting for a wild card spot in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That was all the way back in March. Now the NHL is inching closer to a return, and the Blue Jackets have had some time to rest up. Joining us is Jody Shelley, former Blue Jackets forward and Jackets current color commentator and ambassador. Welcome back, Jody.
Well, thanks, Ann. Nice to talk to you again.
And still with us, Mike Arias, sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. Mike, thanks again for joining us.
The pleasure's all mine, Ann.
Jody Shelley, how quiet has your job been lately?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining, Ann, but it's been fairly quiet and eerily quiet, I guess you could say. I mean, you know, this is the off season now in July. The Stanley Cup would have been handed out 2 weeks ago. This would have been a big day for organizations to sign free agents July 1st.
Yeah.
But it's been very quiet. We've done a few digital Zoom calls. We've stayed engaged with our sponsors and fans as much as we can with the Blue Jackets organization. But other than that, the thrill, the buzz, the excitement of the fans, the game, yeah, it's been very quiet.
What are you hearing from fans?
Fans are, you know, they are very aware of the situation and they're excited, but they don't want to get too excited at the possibility of this returning. And, you know, there's a lot of promise with the NHL coming back. I mean, it seems almost too good to be true in a lot of senses. And I think everyone has that cautiously optimistic approach. But they're very excited for this to get back. It's been a long, almost 4 months, I guess, in our world that has been drastically changed. And the sports world, it seems like people are genuinely looking to sports for some normalcy. So they're excited, but they're still cautiously optimistic, even though this seems to be going to move forward as they've planned.
You mentioned, you know, the thrill, the buzz, the excitement, but that's not really necessarily, I don't know what it's going to be like for players having never, the only time I was ever going to play in public was a volleyball game and I chickened out and got sick to my stomach because I couldn't stand the thought of doing it in front of other people. So I don't know what that's like,
yeah.
But what about that, missing that? What do you see? How do you see that affecting the process?
Well, it's interesting because I've been like everyone else, I've been able to reflect and watch some of the games from the past. And I watched a game, a Stanley Cup final, game seven, about a month ago. And it made me very aware of the impact of the fans just from a spectator's point of view at home, watching on TV. As an athlete, when you're on the ice or when you're on the court, you are so engaged in the moment. Like there's so much urgency on what your job is to do at that single moment with the puck or without the puck. You're wrapped up in your teammates and kind of the strategy on the ice. But when you're, when the whistle blows or you're on the way back to the bench or you're leaving the face-off circle, you know, those moments that the game is paused, it's eerie. It's such a big part of the game. The emotion is driven when you're on the road and the fans are booing you and they hate you and they just despise you. It's so much fun. I mean, there's an energy there too, that you appreciate, you respect the opponent because they bring that. And of course at home, you, the waves of excitement you get from your own fans, the rush, the push, you know, over the top, it's going to be missed. It's going to be a big black hole as far as a 19,000 seat arena with no fans. But if that's what they have to do, the NHL is willing to move forward with it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a return to pro sports. That is Jody Shelley that you're listening to. He's former Blue Jackets player, current color commentator for the team, and ambassador. Also with us, Mike Aray, sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. Listeners, what do you think about the return of pro sports? What are you looking forward to? What are your concerns? What are you going to miss about this new normal? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mike Arace, what about hockey? Is there anything that you've, well, you have been talking about Vancouver and the the plans for these hubs. And that the reason, one of the reasons why they didn't pick Vancouver is exactly the reason they should have picked it.
Yeah.
Mike? I don't know. I guess.
Can you hear me?
Oh, there. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Did you hear the question?
Yeah. Yeah. The Vancouver thing went down. Vancouver might have been the best place in the world to have an NHL hub for a tournament restart. Just because of the way it's handled COVID-19. I think as of Monday, there were 15 people in the hospital with the coronavirus in Vancouver. That'll give you an illustration of how well they've done with it. The NHL was in negotiations with Vancouver among five other cities, a total of six, to do a hub there. And Vancouver wouldn't relax their protocols. When it became apparent that depending on how something might break in Vancouver, that there was a chance they could shut down the playoffs temporarily in the event of an outbreak. The league said, "No, that's Vancouver's too safe. We'll have to go somewhere else." Essentially, what they said. I've got a question for Jody. Mm-hmm. The NHL teams, 24 teams, I think traveling parties of 50 persons per traveling party. So 50 times 12 in each hub. Major League Baseball is going to have expanded rosters. They're going to be flying charters and staying in specific hotels, obviously, with trying to control the virus and create their own bubbles as they fly around as best as possible. But players, for instance, in Major League Baseball are being told that they go from the park to the hotel, back to the park, to the hotel, right to the airplane, fly home or to wherever the next city is, to the hotel, to the park, to the hotel. The NHL is creating bubbles in their hubs for their players. The NBA and MLS are trying something different in one setting in Orlando, but you're still talking about hundreds of people per league, scores of hundreds per league in these places. Jody, can players toe to the protocol?
That's a great question. In a dream world, yes. I think they can, because here's my thought on that. When we sit and look, okay, if you're going to win a Stanley Cup, potentially from day one in the hub city to the end of it, you could be almost 2.5 months in this bubble. Okay.
Right.
For this to start, to get the ball rolling, they have to commit to this. Now, ideally, you know, things lift and the world is a better place and we're able to mix and mingle a little more in 2.5 months. But in reality, you know, is that going to happen? Nobody knows. But listen, okay, in 2 weeks after the start of the play-ins, you're going to whittle down to 16 teams in each side. So now there's 16 teams total. So you're going to have 8 in each side, okay, competing for the playoff spots.
Mm-hmm.
And within another 2 weeks, you're going to be down to 8 teams, 4 on each side. So, or 2.5 weeks. So what I see here, and when you get to that point as an athlete, when you see that smaller number of teams, now I know during that time, there's more time between games. You know, first when they start, there's going to be a lot of hockey. It's going to be fast and furious. It's going to be a tournament setting where there's going to be games in the morning, the afternoon, and the evening for different teams. You could play 2 days in a row. You could play every other day. There's going to be a lot of hockey. So that doesn't concern me because, you know, you're going to be busy as an athlete. It's the later rounds. Then it's the reality that, hey, we could actually win a Stanley Cup. When you get to the semifinals and there's 4 teams left, 2 on each side, that's when you really believe. That's when that is like, okay, we've talked about a Stanley Cup. I think I believe I want to win a Stanley Cup. But when you're there, you're like, okay, boys, let's lock this down. So for me, the last month will be a total focus for the players. The first little bit will be a blur because they'll be so busy. The middle part, that's for me where there's still 8 teams left, 4 on each side, where you're kind of like, okay, there might be a little wandering that could be done by these players. That's where they're going to have to really focus and lock these guys down. But the beginning and the end, I think there's 2 different animals there as far as the buzz to start and then the end. The reality of actually raising the Stanley Cup.
Jody, what's the deal with if someone on a team gets exposed, or if a team is exposed and there's infection, do they have to drop out then?
Well, yeah. the player will be out, not the whole team. I'm hearing that they're right now they're saying that if it's 1 case or 2 cases, players will be held out. They'll be just like any other injury. It'll be not disclosed why they're out. But if it's not a major infection throughout the team, they will continue to play.
Jody, you had a good long career. Let me ask you this. I'm sure you could stay in a bubble with a cup on the line when you were 30. Could you do it when you were 20?
If I had enough 30-year-olds around me, I could.
Exactly.
I could. Yeah. I mean, if I had enough guys that looked me in the eye and said, listen, you know, you don't understand. Just like the father-son talk. You know, this will make sense someday. If you're a young guy and you're looking at the older guy and he's looking at you and saying, listen, you don't understand this right now, but this opportunity only comes around once in a career, once in a lifetime. We need to lock this down. Then I think you're on your toes, little boy.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really good point you brought up. You know, it's not no matter what sports league we're talking about here that's coming up on a restart. It's obviously not outlandish to think that, especially as cases are spiking all over the United States, that 4 or 5 guys on one team get the virus. And then what happens to the whole tournament? I think that's a fascinating question.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, just think about it. Jody, was there any disappointment about Columbus not being chosen as a hub, or was that sort of pie in the sky anyway?
No, I think there was some genuine disappointment. I think that was something exciting that could be done for our city. It would have been a win, and a small win and a big win at the same time. The NHL is a major league that's well-respected all over the world, and to choose this area for what it has to offer and how it's handled this time would be a feather in their cap. I really believe that.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, they worked really hard, Ann, and, you know, they had a line of negotiations open with the league right up until the end. And so, you know, they didn't make the cut. They made the cut from 10 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then were they trying really hard. Would it have been a perfect place, I think, or as good as you can get to host in the United States? Yeah, I think so. They really wanted it here. What it came down to was when they went from 4 hubs to 2, it kind of took Columbus out because it just doesn't have a hotel big enough to accommodate that entire traveling party.
Yeah.
And that was a bubble consideration, obviously, and that's what kind of scuttled Columbus's chances.
What are those traveling parties going to be like, Jody? How big? I mean, are they paring down like trainers and things like that and coaches or what?
Yeah, there's a list that's been made. I know the organizations have made lists of 50 people. And, you know, you've been asked if you're a media relations person, which every team needs, are you ready to commit to this for this? It could be this period of time walking into this. And yeah, they have their list of 50. It's a hard 50. They've came to that number. It's players, which they're going to carry 30. Then you have training staff, coaches, and probably some management people in there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be very, very strict, but a big commitment from a lot of the people outside of the players even. You know, think about that. The trainers who and the equipment people who are there behind the scenes to make everything seamless.
Right.
They're asked to do this, but they're all in. They have their list, and I think those guys are excited to be a part of it.
What about media, Mike Arace?
Nothing's been announced that way. I'm presuming, and from what I know so far, that this could be really good television if you can get over the fact that there aren't people in the stands. Mm-hmm. They're going to do a lot of interesting things with all of these things with television production. That said, my presumption and there's been nothing that's curtailed me from thinking this way is that. They're going to want very limited or no other media there just because of coronavirus concerns.
Oh, you mean just broadcast only?
Oh yeah, it's something they can concern. It's something they can control is keep the rest of the media out, except for the television rights holders, and then we'll just Zoom everyone else.
So I think Michael, we're actually we'll be staying in Columbus. And so we'll be doing our Fox Sports Ohio broadcasts from Nationwide Arena, it sounds like.
Right.
So we'll be staying in Columbus, and there'll be no broadcasters in the building until the third round, then national. It sounds like, this is what I'm hearing now, then national will move a couple people in to do that.
Yeah, I was talking to Johnny Forslund recently, and he's one of NBC.
Okay.
He's one of NBC Sports Network's play-by-play guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he said his expectation was to be in a studio in Stamford, Connecticut for the duration, although that could change. So, yeah, in terms of media, and it's really not going to get covered the way things are normally covered. It's going to be just like all of us have been doing. We've been looking at Google Meet.
Well, you know, I have to say that I hate it when Jody and the gang aren't on. When the Nationals, media is covering it. It stinks. So,
thanks, Ann.
Yeah,
we
you're welcome.
That.
It's so much more fun to.
You saying that about Rimmer too?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Of course, the whole
just
game. Yeah, of course. We're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about pro sports. I know you guys are care about things other than hockey. We'll continue to talk about the Blue Jackets and other pro sports returning to whatever venue they go to get it started back up again amid the pandemic. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the return of pro sports. Still with us, former Blue Jackets forward and now color commentator and ambassador for the Jackets, Jody Shelley, and also Columbus Dispatch sports columnist Mike Arace. If you have a question or comment about pro sports returning, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jody Shelley, does the cannon travel with the team?
You know, unfortunately, Ann, I don't think it's allowed in the 50-party traveling crew. So okay. I'll have to stay home. We'll just have to fire it from somewhere in Columbus.
Okay. Let's see. Burke in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Burke.
Hi. How you guys doing? Hey, Jody, I wanted to tell you, being playing for the CAHL here in Columbus, us returning back to the ice, I'm not going to lie, it was a little nerve-wracking. Yeah, a lot of concerns. But once we started playing, it went okay. My question is, you have all these players right now located all over the world training. How are they going to get back? And are they going to come to Columbus, or are they just going to meet in the hub cities?
Great question. I'm glad to hear you're back up and playing hockey. That's always a good sign. You know, they will come back to Columbus. There is phase 3 starts in your home city. So they'll make their way. They started now. There was 12 last week. This week, there's 24 skaters here in Columbus. There's more to come, and they'll start a training camp here. The infamous John Tortorella camp will start down at the Ice House, down attached to Nationwide Arena. That'll go on for 2 weeks. That's the plan. If everything goes smooth, they'll pack up and head as a group to the hub city. So, yeah, they'll all have to get here. They're all making their way back. Some are flying commercial. Interesting, out of Finland, the guys that left here in April left on a private plane. They chartered a plane. And then all the Finns got together. They chartered a big plane back. So they decided if they're going to go there, they'll go as a group and come back as a group. They went to their private homes and stayed, but they've all made their way back to North America this week.
Thanks a lot, Burke, for that question. Anybody else, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mike, in your column today, you wrote that the Blue Jackets can win in the draft if they lose in the playoffs.
Yeah,
what about the draft?
Fans love talking about tank. There's the league had to do something with the draft, obviously, because it could be could have been held on time, but there was so much the coronavirus pause, which began on March 12th. Threw a wrench into everything, including the draft. They came up with a new draft format, part of the lottery format, which determines the top picks. In this special case, were placeholders for teams that were in the 24 team tournament that was invented, but were not above the playoff bar. And the Jackets are one of those teams. And Team E, which had a 2.5% chance of winning the draft lottery, actually won the draft lottery. So right now, the order of the draft, which will be held sometime, I think, in October, the order of the draft, the number one pick is Team E or X or just a blank. It's one of the 8 teams that were below the playoff bar on March 12th. But were placed in the 24-team tournament for this summer. So we don't know which one. There's going to be another lottery probably in August to determine that team. Each team has an equal 1-in-8 chance, which is to say that if the Jackets lose to Toronto in the first round of the tournament, in the qualifying round of the tournament, they will have a 1-in-8 chance of winning the lottery and the rights to choose what could be a generational player in Alexis Lafreniere.
Okay. Jody, what?
Ian, that's fraught there. I mean, you just want him to win, right? I mean, this is A-Race screaming at the children. Just get out there and win. And the kids are like, Mom, you know, Alexis Lafreniere, it's Sidney Crosby. I'd rather take the 1-in-8 chance, you know?
You're right. And, that kind of stuff, yeah, it eludes me. That's true. I just like to see him play. Yeah.
I think it's fixed anyway. I think that Lafreniere is going to be given to Chicago or Montreal or New York anyway. So I say go ahead and win. You know, the thing's rigged anyway.
What do you think, Jody?
I don't know. I mean, I like the way the draft is set up this year. You know, in reality, if the Blue Jackets don't succeed in the first round, I'm bullish on them. I think they will. There will be a lot of buzz and excitement if they get the first overall pick. They've never had a player like this, Lafreniere. He's been a dominant force in amateur hockey. He'll be one of those players like Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon. So, you know what? It's not the prize. You can't sit here and focus on that as an organization, but we will be very excited if something happens, they do fall in that play-in round and they do get that pick.
And Jody, we talked about this last month, but you really like the Jackets' chances.
I do. I like the way they play the game. I like the way they've used the regular season to come together as a team. Hmm. I like the way that they've used their depth in Cleveland. I think a lot of teams say they have depth, but once you see the depth, actually, the depth in this organization vaulted this team back in a playoff picture. With all the injuries, yeah, it would have been easy to fall off. They didn't. They have some real good young talent in the cupboards, and we've seen it. And I think that creates a competition here. And I think they have the best coach in the playoffs. I think John Tortorella, he's won a cup. It's been a long time. But I think he's in a very good place. And I think a tournament setting for him is a special place. And I'm bullish. If their goaltending is good, I look out for this team. I would not overlook them.
It's been it was a lot of fun seeing all the young faces come out there and to see what they had to do, what they could do. when the team went away in April, what were their marching orders? I mean, get better, heal, and what?
Yeah, I mean, the guys that could stay, like Seth Jones had surgery on his ankle. Bjorkstrand had the same surgery 2 weeks later. They stayed at Nationwide Arena. They were able to rehab with the head medical trainer, Mike Vogt, and his staff almost every day. They were able to be on the ice and progress how they had to. So I think they had 8 or 9 guys on the shelf at the time. So number one marching order was stay safe. And for the guys who needed to heal, rest up. You never know. We could be playing hockey. So it seems like through this all, if this all settles and they do get to come back, they should be in good shape and a lot of organizations are, for a start in August. Can you believe it? A start in August.
Isn't that weird?
To finish last season.
Yeah, it is weird. At least they get to play indoors on ice. I don't know what's going on with the rest of the teams in the dead of summer, Mike Arace. With the hub in Orlando, is that an indoor venue?
Yeah, well, they have both.
Okay.
I mean, that's a huge complex, the ESPN Wild World of Sports complex. It's as your guest was saying, you know, she's from Orlando and she knows much better than I, but that is a sprawling, huge campus with all kinds of facilities there. And yeah, that's not a problem. And, you know, just to throw this in, it's been bubbling up this morning and this is not cast in stone yet, but it looks like the league is leaning toward Toronto and Edmonton as their two hub cities, probably because for a couple of reasons. One is, the exchange rate, they'll save a lot of money. And two, the coronavirus is much less pointed in Canada than it is here in the United States.
Right. Yeah. So saving money. And yeah, I kind of figured that was what it was looking like when there were so many Canadian cities, on the list.
Well, there's also much, the virus is far better under control up there. I mean,
that's
like,
what I mean.
You look
yeah.
at Vegas. Clark County, Las Vegas is top 50, maybe top 40 in the country right now. And, L.A. County and Cook County and Chicago have been jockeying for 1 and 2 for a number of coronavirus cases for some months yeah. now. And they were, quote-unquote finalists to be a hub city. And that, to me, always seemed crazy.
Can you believe that Canada lifted their border restrictions for hockey?
That's
for this shocking. Shocking, I say. That's shocking.
Right?
Well, they Incredible. Had to do it for something, but I think the devotion to the game is obvious, no question about that. All right, so Jody, what other sports have you been missing or did you miss during this time, and what are you looking forward to seeing come back?
Well, I missed baseball. My son plays baseball, and we're a swimming family, so we're happy to see a little bit of swim team happening. So as a family, selfishly, we miss the baseball, the big league games, the summer. I mean, there's a few things you identify with summer. Mm-hmm. There's a few things you identify with normalcy. And I think that was a big hole in May and June. And then for swimming, we're glad we're able to go to the pool and you know, from time to time with the restrictions, it's just nice to have those things and to be able to do that. And what am I looking forward to? I'm looking forward to, you know, hockey finishing up this season, squeezing in next season, and then hopefully getting back to the regular, what we're used to. Hockey starting at a certain time, football starting on time, baseball starting on time, and us being able to interact and enjoy the things we enjoy to do on a simple, on a day-to-day basis.
And Mike Arace, how stupid is baseball being at this point?
Well, Ian, it's it's a low bar for them, and they've certainly hurdled it. No, they had a chance to do some things. Like you see, like the NHL, for instance, right now, part of their negotiating all these issues with their players' association, the union of players, is part of their negotiations that they're working on a new CBA to extend labor peace as they begin to negotiate new national television contracts. Very important. And as they try to get their arms around the escrow money that the players are going to have to pay to cover half the losses of this lost season. I mean, baseball could have done a lot of these things, and it just turned into another one of their stupid labor wars. They're just little I only have expletives for it, so I'll just stop there. It was silly.
Well, I heard one player say that, yeah, they hate to do this, particularly when there's so much, suffering, financial suffering going on across, you know, the world and across the country, but that they're doing it for the future players. They have to defend the future of the players' rights going forward.
Well, in a nutshell, the owners kind of got some concessions in the last round of labor talk. Gave the appearance of some sort of salary cap mechanisms, which is something that players who fought for a free market for over a century and have made great strides in that area over the last, 50 years in our lifetimes, they really did not want. They want a free market, and the owners got some concessions and decided that they're going to try to squeeze the players some more. Is the way I read the situation, and they used coronavirus as sort of a pressure point, and then the players dug in, and then things just got ridiculous. There was not a lot about health reasons that made baseball finally kind of all those negotiations blow up. It had nothing to do with health, but it had everything to do with money, and it just came across as just ludicrous and crass once again.
Jody, real quickly, how do you think the pandemic is going to change hockey and sports going forward? What I mean, is it just going to be about the fans at this point?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Hockey without fans, sports without fans, it's not the same. Yeah. And hopefully it doesn't change it long-term effects on that, but it's going to change it in the short term in a big way. I mean, the game will still be played the same way. The rules are still the same, but the atmosphere, the feeling you get when you watch the game, the feeling you get when you're there, it'll definitely change it. And the way teams travel, the way teams broadcast, I think a lot of these things could change long term.
Well, Jody Shelley, thanks for your time today. I look forward to hearing you when this playoff thing, whatever it is going to turn out to be, starts. But thanks for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. You guys have a great day.
You too. Jody Shelley, former Blue Jackets player, current color commentator and ambassador for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and also Mike Arace, the inspiration for this show today, sports columnist for the Columbus Dispatch. Mike, thanks for your help, as always.
Oh, and the pleasure again is mine, and we need a vaccine.
Yeah.
We should all be chilling out for a year. That's all. That's all I got. Thanks,
okay.
Man.
Take care. Mike Arace from the Columbus Dispatch. And everybody else, thanks for listening today. I hope your team gets back to it as soon as it's safe. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.